Hello, and welcome to another episode of For the Love of Sports. My name is Michael Raziel, and this is a show where we get to talk about sports, we get to talk about business, and we get to talk about everything in between. Wherever you're listening, however you're listening, you know exactly what to do. Five-star review on Spotify, like and subscribe on YouTube, like and subscribe on YouTube, and five-star review and say something really nice about me and my incredible guest today. I have David Woodley. He's the president and chief revenue officer of Playmaker, as well as the former vice president of ad sales over at WatchMojo.com. David, how you doing today, man?
Doing great. You know, wish the weather was a little bit nicer out, but I think we're kind of into winter finally.
I was going to say, dude, it's like the first time I saw snow all year. So, you know, here we are recording on the 25th of January. You're going to give me that? I'm not going to be. I hate snow, but I'm not going to be that angry about it. It could be way worse. Remember that.
No, 100%. I mean, it's like I have a snowblower in the garage. I was talking to someone the other day, and I'm like, I don't think we're going to use it, which is nice, but also, like, it's fun to use it. It's fun to pull that out.
Yeah, exactly. You bought the thing. You might as well use it. But, yeah, for the sake of this episode, we're going to go with no snow for the rest of the year. We'll see what happens. I'm going to cross my fingers. But outside of the snow, a lot of other stuff we get to talk about today. Obviously, David being, again, president of the Playmaker. I'm sure there's different entities.
Playmaker
that are
HQ. There's a lot of Playmakers out there. We're Playmaker HQ.
Okay. I want to make sure that we're 100%.
Yeah.
If you've been on Snapchat, you've probably seen some of the stuff they've done. You've worked with multiple athletes. You guys have multiple shows on Snapchat, which is really cool if you ever play around the Discover feature. So a lot of cool stuff that you guys are doing. So I'm very excited to get into that. But again, you've been in ad sales for practically your whole career. You worked at The Onion. If anyone's familiar with those headlines, that's kind of look real, but like you kind of have to double take for a second. One of my favorite places on the internet, absolutely. And again, Watch Mojo as well as many others. But David, before we hop into all of that, your career, what you're doing, algorithms and the such, the first question I have for everybody on the For the Love of Sports podcast is, why do you love sports so much?
I grew up in it. I mean, I was born in Lincoln, Nebraska. So neither my parents moved around all throughout life, and as did I. But, you know, grew up there and for the first like 13 years. And like it was kind of right when like Nebraska was only good back then, right? It's an embarrassment now. But I mean, I was there like 94, 95, 97.
I was going to say you were there for the titles, right?
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, my mom grew up in a family of nine, and you know, they all like sports, and, you know, grandpa did. And my dad grew up a big sports fan as well, as did his parents. And then, you know, I got hooked quickly. I mean, we would go to Kansas City every year. I mean, I think one of my first memories is I had to be like four, maybe three and a half, four. I went to like Kansas City to watch a Twins game. And we're big Minnesota fans because my dad grew up close to there. And then I was really hooked in 91. I was like six and a half. My dad took me to Game 7, the World Series, which is the last time a Minnesota sports team has been in a championship, much less won one. And that was like the Jack Morris like 1-0 game. And, you know, the night before, we'd driven like halfway and stayed with some friends. And that was like when Kirby Puckett, you know, who was like, you know, my hero growing up. I mean, you know, that's much later on. But, you know, hero growing up, you know, had the, you know, like the game of his life, right? Like Minnesota, like you're talking about like greatest moments of all time. And, you know, I thought I was really onto something when they won it in you know, that 91, you know, 6 years old, celebrating a championship. Surely there'll be more of these to come. And, yeah, not so much. You know, my brother was born in 92, and we always joke that,
oh no,
he's the curse. You know, he's the reason why they can't do anything. But no, I just loved it. Like, loved all sports. I mean, you know, we watched a ton of it, right? And, you know, growing up back then, you know, sort of dating myself, it's like, you didn't have like MLB extra innings and stuff, right? Like we maybe saw the Twins and they were kind of crappy back then. Like you'd maybe see them on TV like three, four times a year, right? So it was like a lot of like fun moments with my dad, like getting the newspaper, like going through the box score, right? Or like turning into ESPN where like the bottom line like didn't exist. It would only pop up like at 29 and like 59 of the hour. And like you would rush there to turn it on, and like you sometimes like miss the twin score. You have to wait like another 30 minutes to see it. And then the last other moment of that too, the very nostalgia feeling was we'd play, you know, as fathers and sons do, we'd play a lot of catch, and we would try to we'd get some of the Twins games all the way in Nebraska, but like we had to use his work Bronco because it had like a pretty big antenna, and we'd always like listen to somebody. We'd get like really crackly, and like around like 8 it would like lose power because that's I guess what AM stations do, and like you would like have to like go up and turn it up and like hear when like a big moment was happening. So just a lot of like really good memories of sports, and you know, played all the sports watched an insane amount of them, and like really it was like kind of the only thing I really cared about, you know, growing up and even into you know, adulthood, college, you know, getting jobs out in the world. Like, you know, I have other tastes and I guess passion, but it's always been like sports and everything. Baseball, football. We used to go to the local dirt track racing things when I was young, so like I'm a huge fan of like all, you know, I have the Formula One shirt on, but huge fan of like NASCAR, like all the series, all the dirt track series, sprint cars. I mean, it's, people are like, you know, do you have a sport you don't watch? And it used to be like soccer a long time, but now I'm like gotten more and more into that. And like I saw my dad up in Minnesota for the Vikings Giants game, which went terribly for me. Good for Giants fans,
pretty good,
yeah,
for you.
And yeah. And we were talking, like, there was another couple of people we went with. We were talking, like, soccer. My dad, like, he's like, how do you watch soccer? I was
like, mornings on Saturdays, you know, dude. It's perfect. I love morning sports. Like, it's the best.
Like, yeah, and you're about to have a kid, so you'll be up early. And, you know, it's like Formula One and soccer. Like, there it is. You know, you're up with a baby and gives you something to do. But, no, it's always been just, like, a huge passion of mine.
I love it, man. Yeah, I think those stories. So, I have kind of similar story. So I obviously, so I'm a Mets fan, Giants fan. I'm sure people that have listened to the show are very familiar with that. But like, I've had the same kind of, you have like, you know, go to bed, okay, turn on the radio just low enough that I could listen to it, right? So I have similar stories like that. Like, yeah, like when growing up, it was just something. But yeah, now it's just kind of ridiculous. Like, you don't have to wait for a paper. You don't have to wait for the 29th minute of the hour. Like, now it's just, everything's instantaneous. There was something about that kind of having to go like out and seek it, like having to find it. It gave you a little extra. I much prefer this, but there was something about having to like work to find out the score to a middle of July baseball game. I'm sure when the Twins are 20 games under 500 and you're still out there, you're still like, no, I really want to know what happened. Like, yeah. There's something about that.
And to see a highlight too. I mean, that was it. We'd watch like Baseball Night and Sports Center. You'd like wait. And they'd always like put it at the end of the show, and then like half the time it'd be like 20 like one thing that happened. It was like it could be like an 8-7 like,
yeah, I was gonna say, that's exactly like, what I was gonna say. It's like,
here's, yeah,
look at this catch.
Yeah. And they go, by the way, like Puckett had two home runs and Herbeck had a grand slam, but like here's, and it's funny, and but like you would get really pumped when it would like ever lead off, right? Or like you got like more than 20 seconds of it. And I think that's, again, it's something. It's gotten better. I mean, it's great. I mean, like now it's like, you know, phone. I'm watching, you know, the Timberwolves. You know, watching every single game, and like it's beautiful because in my, you know, my kid, if he needs to watch something or whatever, he can do it too. But yeah, there is that kind of nostalgia feeling to it, and it was fun because I think you guys like us, like we grew up and like saw both sides of it, right? And like my kids will always be here and watch whatever you want and access to all this. But you know, I think back then it was like you got exposed to local teams and all that, and like, you know, even being a Nebraska fan growing up, it was like you didn't get like a ton of other games. I feel like you maybe had like 5 to 6 a week, like a Saturday to watch. Maybe there was more, but it wasn't like, oh, you can watch every game. So you really only watched who Nebraska was playing, and then I feel like there'd be like a night game or whatever. And I don't think College Game Day was around when we first started watching either. So it's funny, and I don't know. It there's something cool about it, and it's like the evolution of sport. And, you know, a lot of things get said about audiences, not younger generation not caring, blah blah blah. But it's not true. It sticks around, and there's just sort of different ways to consume it.
I was gonna say it's just different at this point, right? Like, you know, specifically speaking about the NBA. Like, obviously everyone knew Michael Jordan. Like, pretty much everyone on planet Earth knew who Michael Jordan was at the time. But like, it's really, as you said, it's like less about local teams now. Like, I grew up here in New Jersey, so I was kind of a Nets fan growing up. I don't really care about basketball that much, but I'll watch LeBron. Like, I'll watch like these, you know, I don't like the Celtics, but I'll watch them because they're star-studded kind of thing, right? And like, I think that's what's really interesting specifically about kind of what you guys do at Playmaker. So maybe we'll like Quentin Tarantino this around a little bit, but like the fact that basketball specifically, and now football, we're starting to see it a lot with like quarterbacks, like very much with quarterbacks, I don't want to say it's less about the team. Basketball, I think it is 100% less about the team, but like you're starting to see kids especially, and you know, even people my age, I just turned 31, I turned 32 this year, like I'm more worried about what the stars are doing in basketball aside from what the actual teams are doing. Like, I don't care about the Cavaliers, but LeBron was on the Cavaliers. Like, okay, now Donovan Mitchell's there. Like, I'll see what Donovan Mitchell's up to. He's pretty cool. His dad's, you know, used to play for the Mets or whatever the hell it is. That's always a fun one, right? So what have you kind of seen specifically on that front where, like, as you said, you had local teams and that was kind of it back then. Now you're looking at it where the internet is abundant. You can get anything, anywhere, at any time. How are you guys creating that type of content? And I guess maybe I should have asked a bunch of other questions before we got here, but whatever. How are you guys really making sure that you're leaning into that aspect of, you know, that kind of that star-studded mentality, and people care way more about who is on the Knicks than the actual Knicks themselves?
Yeah, no, I mean, I think the NBA, and it, by design, right, it always kind of was a star-driven league, but not as much as it is now. And, like, you know, the NBA also really embraced social media early on and well. And, like, you know, they weren't trying to, like, you know, take down copyright claims against every YouTuber. Yes. You know, like, they're not going to, like, make money on those highlights, but they're also not, they're not going to, like, jam you up and be, you know, because they understood the value of that early on, right? I think they were great on, I feel like, Twitter early on and all the platforms. So yeah, I mean, it's been always going that way. And I think the other leagues trying to, like, figure out how to get there, and, like, baseball's trying to, I mean, but for us, honestly, it's listening to our audience, and it's like the people creating the content for our audience, which is very much like 18 to 29. They are 18 to 29. Like, they're kind of on the younger end of that. So, like, they're the ones that are, like, watching this, consuming this, in all this as well. And it's just, it's staying on top of trends. I mean, it's crazy. Like, you got me to bounce around a little bit all over the place here, but it's like just the way we work, it's all done via, like, text, right? Like, we do some Slack, we're kind of moving there now, we're up to 60 people, but it's like text, and it's like a million different chains, a million different group texts. Like, it's crazy.
Yeah.
But that's how we're catching all this stuff, right? And, like, everyone, you know, you get people that are, like, really passionate about it, they're doing it. Like, we pull in people that have built up sort of their own micro communities themselves, but they're passionate about it. And I think for us, it's staying on top of all those trends, like, staying on top of, like, who is moving the needle, like, who isn't. And I think as for a sports fan, it's great. And, like, again, I'm a Timberwolves fan, right? They're terrible. They're always terrible. But I was able to stay engaged with NBA over the years. And you obviously would watch, like, Durant and Cat. But again, you're talking about a team that was, like, not making the playoffs, and, like, what, they would get smoked. You stay engaged because of the LeBron stuff, right? Like, you know, are you going to root for them? Are you going to root for the big three? Are you going to root for them to get taken down? Like, the Cavs versus Warriors, right? Like, David versus Goliath stuff. And you always had those personalities that, like, you're flipping through. Oh, okay, you know, I'll watch this. It's LeBron. Or, you know, I'll watch this. It's Durant. I think I said Durant, or I meant Kevin Garnett. But you're like, hey, you know, and it's interesting, right? And, like, the storylines and, like, the kind of fake rivalries and stuff. And, again, I think we tackle those in a good way. Like, we have snapshots built around that stuff. We have one, like, Athlete Luxuries that talks about, you know, not just like, oh, here's LeBron's mansion. It's like, you know, there's a whole episode there on, like, LeBron's watches, right? And, like, these players have become more accessible as well because they've learned, like, their own brand and putting it out there and everything. And we have, like, a series, you know, Got Beef, that, you know, explores kind of the rivalries of, you know, sports and all that as well. And we have a series called, like, This Day in Sports, which it's not even that much about, like, what goes on. Like, oh, like, Steph hit a game-winning three last night. It's not really covering that. It's just, like, covering sort of like the sort of culture and stories, like, around sports. And I think it's interesting, right? And I think we've been able to do a good job where it's like, yeah, we'll still recap stuff that gets going on, but I think there's more of a conversation about, like, what is coming next, and then sort of, like, all these, like, the internal debates that people have. I mean, one of the things we are doing more and more of is, like, ranking our, like, top 10 of all time, and we're taking, like, our spin on it. We're asking, like, our audience and stuff. And it's funny, and it's like, you know, you ask someone, I'm a few years older than you, but you ask someone, like, my age or older, or probably split between us, who's the best ever? It's like, a lot of people, Jordan, right? And, like, Kobe's right there. And it's like, a lot of it now is, you know, it's LeBron number one, you know, it's Jordan number two. But then it's like, a lot of the older players kind of get, like, shuffled down, because I think people are getting kind of smarter about, you know, how it is. It's like, you know, Steph Curry could dominate any era, right? Durant would dominate any era. And then you're like, you know, would Jordan dominate right now? Probably, but, like, he also wasn't shooting the three. Like, could he have learned? Maybe. But it's such a different game now. It's evolving, and I think we try to, like, really champion that, right? Versus getting caught in the, oh, it was, like, better back in the day, or it was, like, better in my day, because when you have a younger audience, they don't care, right? It's like me, yeah, caring about, you know, my grandma, like, talking about, like, the 56 Cubs, like whatever. Like, you know,
sorry,
like,
grandma. Like, they didn't win the World Series, like, either. Like, it doesn't matter.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, no, exactly. Exactly. So it's just staying on top of the trends and really listening to the audience. And, I mean, we go in there in the comments, we listen to them, and we cover players they want to hear about. And we typically know what's going to do well, but like we don't always know what's going to do well either. You know, it's like LeBron could be a hot topic for us one day and the next day like ice cold, and then it just it's always evolving. And I think that's like the fascinating thing about social media and networks and you know, just younger generation having so much more access to information than anyone ever had before. And like, you know, now they're growing up with these, they know how to like Google search, that you can like find stats like this, which is like something that, that hadn't been available until relatively recently. Or like, and if you're a baseball nerd like myself, like 15 years ago.
Baseball Reference is the greatest thing on earth. Like, it
is. Sean Palmer's great. Good dude.
Dude, I don't know him. If you know him, love an introduction. Shout out Sean if you're listening to the show. But no, Baseball Reference is one of the coolest places to hang out, right? Like, I'll just like go up and just like, sometimes, you know, it's like it's the middle of July, there's only so much stuff going on. My cousin and I were, he's a big Yankees fan, I'm a big Mets fan, we're always hanging out, and it's just like, I don't know, what do you think Barry Bonds hit in like 1999? It's like, I don't know, let's look it up. And then you just dive down the hole of like, this guy's the greatest player of all time. I don't care if he used steroids because everyone else was using them too, and he was that much better than everybody. I don't give a shit. Like, put this guy in the Hall of Fame. We just had the Hall of Fame the other day, right? And they still didn't get him in. But like, it's things like that where now, as you said, it's so easy. And you're right. I think especially in a sport like basketball, it's like bigger, stronger, faster. 9 times out of 10 is going to win. Like, yeah, Michael Jordan was incredible. He put basketball on the map. He did everything. Never going to take that away from him. But like, the people he was playing against were like literally mechanics in the offseason. Like, it's always just so funny to me. And I don't want to have that debate. I'm not here to do that. But it was always just very funny to me that like, you could say that to someone and they could be like, I don't care. It's like, well, I think it's kind of important. Like, I don't give a shit about this argument, but I think it's kind of important. And the fact that, you know, you said something like, you read the comments. Shout out first, you guys, for the comment section of any video ever is just the worst place on planet Earth. So like, shout out you guys for surviving that and you having your mentals about you on a daily basis. But like, listening to your audience is a much easier said thing than done, right? Like, it's so easy for people to say all this stuff and then not do it or not care. Like, how are you guys actually able to sift through what is just bullshit and what is like, oh, actually, yeah, that's kind of cool. That's a good idea. Or yeah, I do kind of want to know what, you know, Kyle Korver did with his last $1 million. Like, how do you guys know what's actually useful and what's not from the comments?
It's just, you have people that like live it, that, you know, eat it, breathe it, sleep it, all of the above.
That they're, sounds
like,
terrible.
That themselves. They're finding this. Yeah. They're finding this content elsewhere. Right. And like, I think the really fun thing about sports in general is like, it opens itself up for debate and like ridiculous debate, but it's like the stakes are so low that like you can get really passionate about something, like really like mess with friends and stuff, and it never like impacts a friendship, right? I mean, like, try doing that with like politics or news or education, like anything, right? Where there's like actual like stakes at the end of the day, other than you know, will this team win or lose, or maybe you win a bet or not. And so it's, I think that's like part of it, right? And like, you can get people disagreeing, but it's like, they're used to it. And it's almost like it almost sets itself up for that anyways. Like, you, TV, which is still relevant, but you know, I mean, it's like, look at who they have on like TV talking about sports. Now it's just like, now it's all like the same stuff, like be Skip Bayless, be Stephen A. Smith, like be, you know, it's been going on for a while and it's like funny, but it's like, if you can actually go like one level below that, where it's like a little less ridiculous, it becomes like insanely civil. Even if you're, you know, you're making proclamations sometimes that you know are going to get feedback, but like people are respectful. I don't know, and like it's a young, you know, it's a young, diverse, like cool audience, and yeah, we get trolls and people from time to time, sure, but like you've been able to like develop this, and it's kind of fascinating to watch, and there's like some self-policing going on and like more serious convos, and that's it. We listen to them, and again, I think it just comes down to the team we have creating the content, which are like really good trendsetters in their own right.
I love it. And I just did some quick math here. I feel like you're 6-ish years older than me, because if you were 6 in 1991, that's when I was born.
Yeah.
Figured it out. So you're not even really in your target demographic. How do you kind of view yourself? And like, are you just, do you have that type of mindset when it comes to content? Is this just something that you understand so you can kind of not like watch over, quote unquote, I guess. I don't really know the best way to like say that, but like, how do you kind of view yourself being, you know, as you said, 18 to 29, well, you're like 9-10 years removed from your target demographic. How do you then kind of take what you know and still be able to apply it and still be able to make sure that the content's coming out is something that you can then sell against?
Yeah. I mean, the truth on it is like, I don't really give a lot of suggestions in terms of content. Like, I'll throw stuff out there, but it's like, it's not much. I mean, because mm-hmm. it's like, I almost like joke. I'll be like, hey, like, you know, this, I find this interesting, but like the audience may not. And like, sometimes they do, sometimes they don't. So it's, but for me, a lot of it is like, you know, knowing kind of what the market wants, right? Like knowing like what is brand safe, what isn't brand safe, like kind of knowing what metrics will look like. And like, maybe if something isn't, like a new series isn't taking off right away, like knowing, oh, hey guys, like we can keep going, because like, it does take time sometimes, right, to like build IP, or like, you know, there is something to potentially switch here instead of being like, oh, the idea sucks. It's like, no, I've seen this before, different companies, things like that. Like, let's try to go and like switch something. I mean, I think a good example of that, I'm not going to take credit for the switch, but was one of our, I think, most popular Snap shows called This Day in Sports. Like originally it was like my idea, and it was not a great idea looking back, but it was like, hey, we're going to look back and what happened on January 25th across the history of sports. Snap was like, yeah, we don't think that's going to work. And then we were like, oh, let's just talk about the three things that are going to go on today or this week. Like, yeah, it's probably not going to work. We tried it, bombed. And then we kind of sat around, talked to Snap, and then kind of game plan. We're like, hey, why don't we like try something that's just talking about like the stories, right? It's called This Day in Sports, but maybe it's like not this day. It's like the last 3 days. It's just like these trending stories, right? Like anytime Conor McGregor does something, it's a story. Like he calls someone out, like Jake Paul calls someone out. Like, you know, if there's like a LeBron beef, like that's it. And I think it's that. I think it's just being like, hey, you know, we can build this. You know, things don't always have to crush from the beginning. I'm an advisor over like Blue Wire Pods too. And then I met them. I produced a podcast in a sports bar I own with the Detroit Lions beat writer. And I remember like going through that process and listening to your podcast, you know how it is. It takes time to build something. It's not always going to be a hit from day one. And I think I'm able to like provide a bit of that sort of, I don't want to say like calming voice from time to time, but I think like our senior management team can do that, even though I'm like probably the oldest one in the company and they're closer to the demo. But again, like they're not, you know, the rest of the crew, like it's all the younger folks. So it's like helping them, guide them where they can. And then like letting them know, like, I think we're really good at being like, failure is fine. Like having a piece of content that doesn't work, it's fine. Like you learn from it, you move on, instead of like creating a culture where you're afraid if things aren't like taken off. And I think we've been good on that. We can talk about like the longer view in that. And then also on the brand side, it's just kind of, you know, again, it's talking to advertisers, partners, stuff like that. I'm more focused on like the betting partnerships now and stuff, but like mm-hmm. listening to what they want to see, taking it back to our team and figuring out, okay, like that's not necessarily going to work with our audience. This works with the audience, but like, let's come together and like find that sort of middle ground, where, you know, if we are doing some sponsored or branded, it is pretty close to like what we would do normally. And then it's like, hey, why don't you like sponsor some of our normal stuff? You know, we'll make sure it's brand safe. We'll make sure it hits these specific targets you want to hit, and then go from there. So I think it's just kind of providing a long way of saying just like providing like some experience into the fold, and learning too. You're always learning. And I'm learning. I try to dive into the content quite a bit as well and like learn what is working, so then that any sort of suggestions I have on the content do make more sense the next time.
That that totally makes sense. Again, like kind of, as you said, almost like a calming voice. I think that's that actually totally makes sense from that standpoint of like, hey, like, let's just wait a second. We can get through this. Cause I mean, younger people, like I remember when I was 22, 23, 24, it was like, this didn't work. Fuck it. I'm out. Let's change it. Let's do something else. Like it's so easy to do that when you're a little younger. And now, hey, I'm 31. Like I'm only 6 years removed from that, but at least I have the awareness that happened. So that way I can be like, wait a second, take a deep breath. Let's have a conversation about this. We don't have to get angry and leave. Like, let's actually just kind of, hey, and if it doesn't work, it doesn't work. But there's a way that we can kind of get there. And as you said, you guys work with Snap. You're working with brands. You're like first, I guess, what is, give me the definition. I don't know. What is like Playmaker HQ? Like, what is that brand? Like, what are we looking at there when you say Playmaker HQ brand? Like, you have multiple of these stories. You have multiple of these, like, different shows on Snapchat and, you know, obviously in other places mm-hmm. as well. Like, what is that overarching brand?
Yeah, I mean, I think even back in Nipple and the step further, like, Playmaker is the company. We have, like, the Playmaker HQ handles. Like, we think that we are now, like, Playmaker, and, like, most people now know us as Playmaker. But, again, there's a lot of others out there, and we're not trying to like getting any turf wars or anything like that. We've tried to buy the playmaker.com handle a few times. It's like an old computer game thing, but the guy wants too much. But it looks like it's from like 1998, but I digress. I mean, Playmaker HQ, I mean, it's you know, media and management company, sports media management company, you know, again, geared towards like whatever buzzword you want to use, like Gen Z or millennial, like somewhere in between their 18 to 29. And, you know, the brand is, it's fun. It's informative. It's entertaining. It's positive. Mostly, like, we don't really punch down on anything. Like, yeah, we'll like make a joke about Westbrook missing like 10 threes, but it's never like punching down in a way where I just kind of like hopping on the trend. So it's like mostly positive, inspiring, that sort of stuff, but like also being like really fun and like goofy and like realizing kind of, that it's not the end of the world, that none of this stuff is like that serious. So, you know, like the Playmaker brand, you know, we there's a lot of like, so we have a bunch of different brands, right? So like the Playmaker brand, a lot of hoops, you know, the company is kind of founded on that. You know, hoop culture is like number one, like basketball is our number one sport. So if you go to Playmaker, you'll see a lot of that, very basketball heavy. You know, we cover some other sports on there as well, but then like on Instagram, we'll have like the @sports handle. And like, that's where you'll start seeing like more other sports filtering in, like football, MMA, you know, all the way down the list. Mm-hmm. Then we have like @PlaymakerTD, which is exclusively, you know, football. And we have @PlaymakerHoops, which I think is our second biggest handle. And that's all basketball, right? And some crossover here and there, but for the most part, that we have like a baseball channel, betting channel. And then Snap's a little bit different because, yeah, I mean, the way Snap works is like on the Discover platform, each show is it's basically its own audience and it goes find it. So, I mean, we have 35 shows on there, but like most people like don't realize that, right? And like not every show is called Playmaker, Playmaker, Playmaker. So Snap's a little bit different. Like, you know, our This Day in Sports is more about the stories going on. It's like luxuries about the luxuries. We have like This Day in Culture about culture. We have like shows about music, love and sports, you know, and just a lot there. So Snap's its own thing. So we're basically representing like 35 different sub brands under the Playmaker umbrella. But again, like they fit together, but if you're on Snap, you don't necessarily like know that. And so that is a bit different. And then yeah,
you said there's a team of only 60 of you are handling this many brands. That's incredible.
Yeah, I mean, I started, I think there, well, I invested in these guys like in January of 2021. I think there's like 7 employees. So we've gone from 7 to 65, I think, right now. And it's, I mean, it was, there weren't as many brands. There definitely wasn't as many Snap shows back then, but it's grown very organically. And I think the only way you're going to cover all those brands is you get people that are extremely passionate about the brands and passionate about the space, want to grow within the company or want to, you know, they have their own goals, right? To get into sports and stuff. And like, I always say, like, I really wish that like I would have found like this company when I was like straight out of school, because it'd be like a dream job for every reason under the sun. And this isn't like some big recruiting spiel. It's just like the atmosphere that's been created. And like at the end of the day, you get passionate people talking about sports and things they like. Like, it's not work at that point. It's just like something they would probably be doing anyways in a boring job. They'd be on like social media, like giving their sports takes. But like, hey, like now it's your job, and you know, now you're getting paid to do this. And I think that's it. I mean, it's, you know, it's a 60 is a big number, but you know, I think when you compare us to some other companies out there, it's like I think we're doing more with 60 than other companies are doing with like 200.
Oh, absolutely. That's what I mean. Like, that's such an incredible way that you guys are able to optimize the amount of content that you're putting out there. And it's not all just kind of repurposed. It's all very, or it's unique to each of those sub brands, as you said, which I think is the most important part. I'm sure there's a little bit of crossover from hoops here to hoops there. But at the same time, as you said, those 35 different Snapchat shows just on its own just sounds just like an astronomical number. And those are, I assume, 5 days a week, 3 days a week, something along the lines of enough times that it's not like it's just a once every couple times a week thing. Like, it's out there and you guys are creating that content. So shout out to you and the team, man. Like, that sounds like a lot of work. So kudos and congratulations. And as you said, do what you love. You'll never work a day in your life, so why not, right?
Yeah, something like that, you know. And you know, and a lot of the talent is like, we promote from within a lot, and like we don't lose anybody either. So it's like it's interesting. You know, they all stick around, but that's great too, right? You're not constantly like backfilling like new hires and getting them up to speed with the brand. And like when we do hire someone new, like they're brought up to speed like really quickly. And I think one of the things that helps as well is like we just onboarded this new creator last week, and we're having to do some betting content. And you know, she was asking like, hey, you know, what do we do? Like, what do you want me to do? And all this, and we're like, you know, here's like some show ideas. But like, what we really want you to do is like, you know, you've already built your own channel, like, you know what you're doing, like, really, like, bring what you're doing well there, and, like, do that here, and, like, we'll give a couple, like, small pivots to, like, make sure there's, like, a betting angle included in it, but, like, don't try to, like, be
something. Be authentic,
for everyone else. You have to be authentic, and especially with, like, this audience, in sports where it's so freaking competitive, if you're not authentic, like, you'll lose people within like 2 seconds, right? So like, you have to be unique, you have to be authentic, and stick with it. It's like,
which it just makes it more incredible that like people watch Skip Bayless, because like, he's very clearly inauthentic, and like, I just don't understand how he gets away with it, but whatever. Shout out to him, he's the one making $10 million a year, not me. Maybe one day, though, David. Maybe one
day. He's kind of like a parody of himself. He's like,
that's what I mean. It's like a, yeah, it's a joke. But like, we know it's a joke, so why do we care what he says? It's just very confusing to me.
Like the Dak, throwing the Dak one away, it's like, everyone's like, oh my God, look at that. You can hear when the wife taps the table, and like, you can see him in the doorway. I'm like, no, he's doing that on purpose. Like, he knows it's, like, he knows what he's doing. And it's like, the funny thing is, like, people still take it at face value, which is ridiculous to me. But like, then you have the other people that like don't take it at face value, and you're like, that's actually pretty funny. Like, you're just like,
oh, that, yeah, exactly, it's hilarious. I do agree with you. It's practically a parody at this point, which is, you know, again, shout out to him, he's the one making the millions of dollars, not me. I'm doing all right for myself, but not quite there yet. But so I guess, like, so that's a lot on the content side, and I'm sure I could keep asking you questions and asking you questions and asking you questions, but you have like a life to live. So I am very also curious on the ad sales side, right? Like, you guys have to make money. You're 60 people. I'm sure you need to have some sort. You're the chief revenue officer. This is the perfect person to ask a question about, right? Like, how do you guys generate revenue? Obviously, there's ad sales. Obviously, there's partnerships. Now you guys are getting into the betting space. We'll talk about that in a little bit. More so, I guess, like, I'm kind of curious. Like, I know you can get monetized on TikTok. Shout out to my upstairs neighbor doing his thing, playing Fortnite. Like, I know you can get monetized on Instagram. I don't really know anything about Snapchat, though. If you guys have 35 Snapchat stories, I'm sure it's not like, hey, you guys make all this shit, and like, thanks. Like, I'm sure there's something there. So I guess, if you could give us a little insight there, because I don't think too many people understand kind of how the Snapchat ecosystem works, and then we can kind of dive into like the partnerships and the ads and like the branded content, that kind of stuff.
Yeah, I mean, Snap's great. I mean, they're they're like our biggest partner. So like, we're obviously
35 shows.
Talk well about them, but no, it's a great platform. I mean, Snap. There's like Snap as a user, right? And like, you can send a friend, you can do your stuff, but like, Snap Discover is like kind of their official partner. A platform, right? Like, where if you go to like the Discover feed, like, you'll see these shows. You know, it's rigorous to get on there to begin with. And actually, the reason why I invested in these guys a year and a half ago is because they had gotten a Snap show. They got the Road to the Fight with Nate Robinson, where he fought Logan Paul, and it did well. And I was like, oh man, these guys are on to something good. Like, you know, they just got to get a few more Snap shows, and then the company's gonna go whoop. You get on Snap, you become a partner, and you pitch them, and if you do well, like, you get more shows and all that. But the beauty there is, you create a show, they put it out to a certain number of people, and if those people like it, the algorithm kind of likes it, and it goes up, and then they sell the ads like programmatically against it, and you know, they do a revenue split with the partner. So it's great as like a publishing partner and all that, because you know, it'd be great to be able to like go sell ads into those, but you know, they're handling it, and I think. It's very similar. It's different, but similar to like YouTube, right? Like the rise of the YouTubers. The beauty there is like all you had to do is find the audience and like get that, and then like YouTube would go sell the ads. It's kind of similar to that. So I mean, you know, Snap, it's great. They're great partners like that. You know, like TikTok monetization, they're rolling out for creators. They haven't rolled out for publishers yet, but we're very excited about that. You know, Facebook, you know, you get some money. Like Instagram, Facebook and Instagram are always kind of like changing monetization and stuff. So that we're more focused on like bringing in sponsors directly on that. And then Twitter, we haven't been monetized long on Twitter, but it's been doing well. Like our video, like we make decent money on Twitter. So I think it's cool, because if you are a upcoming creator, publisher, want to create a company, it doesn't have to be like, okay, we have to go hire someone to go sell these ads to Pepsi tomorrow. It's like, you can work with these platforms, build up a nice base, you know, make some money that way, and then tackle the direct sales and stuff the other way. So we're getting into direct sales more and more. We have the betting division, which we'll cover. And then we also, we have a talent division. I don't think I mentioned, but we represent probably like 50 talent, like a lot of ex-NBA guys, current NBA guys, current NFL guys, like influencers. So we're able to like bring them deals. We just brought a deal, Jalen Wilson, who's the Kansas player, like with Raising Cane's. I think we shot that like yesterday. We're always doing stuff. We did something with KCK and then Colleen Wolf. The other day around like a Pepsi, I think it was Pepsi, you know, stuff. So we're selling talent deals, and then we have like a merch, an e-com business. We got into the card game, sort of like doing box breaks on cards. And then we throw events, and then I'm sure there's like three other things. But we're trying to make revenue as many places as possible, and I think that's like what is nice, right? Is when you can consistently grow like 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 revenue line items. That's what good companies do. I mean, it's why like a Google, you know, they have like a million different revenue generators.
Streams
right?
of income.
You need, exactly. You need those, and it's like. Yeah, and then we're able, you know, if, like, something goes bad tomorrow or, like, whatever, if, like, it would never happen, but if, like, you know, Zuckerberg, like, shot everybody, pulled a plug and everything went down, like, we would suck, but we would be okay. And I think that's, you know, I've learned that over the years at some of these companies as well that I've worked at. It's, like, as long as you have, like, multiple revenue streams, as long as you're also hopping on new trends and trying new things out all the time, like, you have a much greater chance to have a great company versus if you're just kind of... fingers crossed.
I think that makes a lot of sense, especially like because you don't want to put all your eggs into the Facebook basket or the YouTube basket. Right before we hopped on, you know, I've had YouTube creators on the show, and they've always told me kind of like, oh my gosh, like the algorithm's changing. I don't know how much money I'm going to make. Like, I don't know what this is going to be. I don't know what that's going to be. And like, that's because they have one stream of income. And as you said, you're doing multiple things, the talent division, the content, the, you know, the ads supported, the brand partnerships. Then you kept going and going and going, and I apologize, I don't remember all of them, but at what point is it too much, right? Like, you obviously don't want to spread yourself too thin. It's 60 people. You named at least 10 different streams of income. Multiple of these people are working on creating the content, which is kind of the sole purpose of the company, I guess. Like, at what point do you kind of take a step back and, or like, are you evaluating along the way? Are you kind of one of those, like, we got to fail fast and frig it, if it doesn't work, we do something else? Like, how are you kind of from that aspect? Because, yeah, you named 10 different ways that you guys are making money, and that's awesome. But if it's taking away from, like, the core principle of the business, which is to make kick-ass content, that's where most of the money comes from, I'm assuming. Like, doesn't that kind of drain away a little bit? Or is it sucks now, but it'll be better later kind of thing? What's your philosophy on that?
It's always a balancing act, right? And like the thing is, the majority of the people at our company are just creating content. They're not worried about the revenue, right? It's just like, we're like, go create the content. We'll figure out, and then like licensing, I don't know what we just got into, so that's another one. But then yeah, and then it's figuring out like who oversees what, right? And always like moving things along. Like we've done, like we'll heavy up in e-com sometimes, and then we'll like scale it down where it's like the CEO is like handling e-com for a while. Then it'll we'll get to the point where we'll go hire someone else and bring them in. But like e-com is a pretty small self-sufficient department. It's like, how do we make more money in this? Oh, we're gonna get into like the card breaking game, this is fun. We'll have like Nate Robinson come on, like sign some stuff during it. Great. Very self-contained. Licensing, you know, it's you know, there's like, we're all kind of helping, but it, you know, we're all kind of like doing a little bit here and there on it. And it's like, okay, like we're gonna get on these five platforms or whatever, and like it's gonna make its money, like we're gonna automate it, great, don't have to worry about it. Like talent, the guy that runs talent, Polo, it's like him. He has a little help there, but he's like going out and sending all these talent deals, right? It's that, you know, we are hiring up our direct sales team like as we speak. So it's like a perfect example of that, right? Like we're like, we can tackle all this, but for us to do this in a bigger, better way, like we need to go like hire a couple people and like let them own it, trust them with it, build that up. And then it's like, yeah, then it's like everybody, you know, it's like a lot of the company is focused on Snap, right? A lot of the company is focused on Instagram and like TikTok. Like that's where those big revenue streams are and all that as well. So it's trying a lot of things. It's killing things when it doesn't go well, but also growing things kind of methodically as well. And like events, like you're kind of crazy if you want to like get into the events business, right? Especially like if you have all these other nice things, but events has always been like a passion point for our founder, Brandon. And we've always kind of looked at events too and like a way to like grow the brand with the audience. And now we're doing like, you know, 6, 7, 8, 9 events throughout the year. And we're never going to be an events company, but when we're throwing these events, like whether it's a one-on-one basketball tournament or a dunk contest with like internet influencers, like it's cool. Like it is cool for the brand and the sponsors like it and we make money. And it's great. And I think it, you know, again, it's like, could we crack the code to becoming like the world's greatest next event? Like, sure. Like why not? But, we're perfectly happy just kind of like staying in our lane and doing these sort of one-off things when we want.
And I think something like that, those events, right? If you go two over the top, yeah, that becomes your business model. But as you said, if you do 6, 7, 8 of them throughout the year, one every month to 6 weeks, that's really like a brand engagement, brand loyalty strategy, right? You get those 1,000 people to come, you know they friggin' love you guys. Like they're not coming to this because they're like, oh, this kind of sounds cool. They're coming to this because they love Playmaker and everything that you guys do, which will then only entrench them further. I'm sure you can sell merch. As you said, you got sponsorships there. So again, the opportunity to make money is there. But I mean, just from the outside looking in, like with everything everything that you guys do. That's a way to shake hands with some of the people that, you know, they love so much. So that's just a way to just kind of keep them engaged with the brand further and further, which I think is pretty smart from your guys' standpoint. And the thing that always gets me and is interesting to me is kind of the partnerships, the ad sales side, right? We didn't get to talk about it, and we're really not going to, unfortunately, but your time at WatchMojo.com. I love YouTube. I'm on it all the time. I watch YouTube more than regular TV. If football's not on or baseball's not on, and probably it's just on the other TV anyway, but like with that, like the opportunity to find the content, get the content, and then understand how to sell the ads against it, right? Like, I guess it's a very subjective answer, and I'm sure I know exactly what you're going to say, but what comes first, the partnership and the ad or the content itself, right? I'm sure sometimes one or the other, but like, how do you kind of define, again, going back to being brand safe, making sure that you guys are being authentic to yourself, but a brand comes and says, hey, we have this new flavor of Mountain Dew. No one's going to want to drink it because it's fruitcake or something, but we'd really love you to make a show about it. And I don't know if this is a real example or not, because I think fruitcake's a real flavor. I hope it's not. But like, how do you guys like actually look at that and say, man, that's a lot of money. Yes, we can figure something out that's authentic to us, or no, this is ridiculous, or you made the Mountain Dew video, then Mountain Dew comes to you. Like, how does that kind of work in more situations than not, I guess?
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. We did a lot of that. You know, we did some of that at WatchMojo, and then I was at, like, Maker Studios, right, which is kind of, like, the rise of the creator stuff. And we did a ton of, like, branded content there. And then, like, you know, now we're doing that here. And I think the answer to that is, like, you have to know, like, who your audience is. You have to, like, know who your brand is, and you have to, like, go target these brands and be like, hey, we think that this is relevant to you because X, Y, Z, or we have this. It's like, hey, Raisin Cane's. Mm-hmm. We have like 9 athletes in these college towns and they would be great brand ambassadors. Or like we go, hey, PointsBet, like we're in these states, we're strong there. Like you guys should do something with us and we're going to bring talent in. We're going to do this whole like month long March Madness thing where we're following like Carlos Boozer and Duke, a Duke bet that they gave them, and just create a million pieces of content around it. So I think it's like knowing your audience and like knowing enough about who the advertiser is and what they want their audience. And then, yeah, listening to them. And I mean, it's funny you mentioned like Mountain Dew. It's like they have like some new drink coming out, like Pitch Black. And it's like they it's very interesting. Like at the Royal Rumble this weekend, they have like a Pitch Black match. And you're like, people can love it or hate it, but they're going to like know, they're sure as hell going to know like what Mountain Dew Pitch Black is at the end of it. And I think that's part of it too, is like getting it in the conscious of people to give it a shot. And like, I think we've been pretty good at that and like getting the product out there, but again, like doing it in a way where it makes people happy. So I think at the day, like you need the content before you get the ad, and you need to build that audience. I mean, there's a lot of companies that have raised a lot of money and they're like, okay, we're going to like sell a bunch of ads and we're going to like figure out the content. We're going to be like the solution to all this. I think you really need to like hone, you have to like build IP. You know, you have to build up personalities. You have to do all this before you can like really take a full fledged run at the direct sales world. And like we did that like really over the last year. We were getting everything in place. We have this IP. It's great. We're making money on Snap. We're making money elsewhere. But it was like, let's get all the stuff that we can go like now sell that is proven. And then that way when me or anybody else or some of our future hires are in, you know, in the OMD's office or, you know, any of the other major agencies, they can be like, hey, we have these like 10 things that you'd be perfect for. They're like, well, that's great. Maybe we'll do that later. But like, we have this product. How can you do it? And then we were like, well, this is at least 5% similar to what we've done here. We can prove it. You know, let's build us out something new. Let's build us out a new series. And then going from there. But I very much think you need like the content and the audience and all that before you get the rest. And like the rest isn't easy, but it makes it a lot easier when you have a brand that people want to be around. And it's tough. I mean, it's tough. I mean, it's you know, I've started my own startups that have done okay and failed in some cases. And it's like, you know, some of it is timing, luck, all that good stuff. But you have to have like the content before you can reasonably think you can bring in revenue.
That makes sense. Yeah, I mean, I think I kind of agree with you there. I thought that was kind of going to be the answer anyway, because right, like yeah, you can talk about the making a TV like a show or anything about particular brand X, but if no one cares about who you are or what you do, what the hell's the point, right? So I think that's always kind of makes sense from that standpoint. I was just curious more from the, did you talk about Raisin Cane's prior and then Raisin Cane's came to you? Or did you talk about fried chicken prior and you're kind of set up like the Popeyes, Raisin Cane's, Chick-fil-A, whoever's interested, we're talking about fried chicken. Whoever wants it, come take it, right? So it's kind of that aspect that I'm really curious about too. So I guess, and then...
Yeah, I mean, that was like, yeah, that was just like we had athletes in these college towns and it was like, who are, you know, who are the QSR things around. It's like Raising Cane's in the markets, like Popeyes in these markets. Like, we did a thing with like And Pizza, which is like it's good pizza.
You live in New Jersey. You live in New Jersey.
Yeah.
Make sure it's good pizza. Okay.
Yeah, it is. They're in New Jersey too. No, it is. It's the
longer. I'm busting boss. We're good.
No, I know. It's the longer one or whatever, and they do well on college campuses. So that was a great example. We're like, hey, we have like 13 athletes in these key markets. So those are very regional, and I think like again with like the betting ones, we've done a lot of big betting ones lately. It's just like we have this audience that you want that you're not hitting through your other channels, and then like we have them. They are betting. They want to bet, and like they really want to know about, you know, who you are and like the content you're bringing in and all that.
Let's talk about that. That was the last thing I did want to talk about, was the sports betting partnerships. Familiar with you guys. I worked at Caesars for a little while, obviously, so ran into a couple people from Playmaker and what you guys have been up to, and I think it's really, really cool. I think it's pretty impressive. I guess from the gambling side of things, right? So gambling became legal back in 2018, slowly moved across the states. Coronavirus pops up. States need a way to find, you know, $150 million in tax revenue. Just kind of snap your fingers and figure it out. So now all the states are pretty much legalizing, right? We just had Ohio. We're going to have Massachusetts. Maryland wasn't too long ago. Kansas wasn't too long ago. How did you start, like, when did you start to realize, like, hey, there's a completely other revenue stream here, still just making content, but like now an entire new industry within sports is coming up, and oh, by the way, this entire industry has pretty much more money than all the other industries combined. I'm obviously being facetious, but we kind of understand how casinos work. When did you guys really decide to say, like, hey, let's take a crack at this and see what we can do, how we can do it, and then start to work with some of these companies? As you said, you handle a lot of these partnerships, so I'm kind of curious, what do you look for, what do they look for in you, and how are you guys able to make a successful partnership specifically in the betting space?
Yeah, I mean, I think like when I originally invested in these guys, I was like, oh, there's something here for betting eventually. Like, they're already doing a couple deals here and there, but it was around like the normal sports content, and then I came on full-time a few months later, and I think it was like something I believe pretty strongly in, that I was like, you know, this is coming, there's a lot of money coming, right? So that's like a good reason. But I was like, I looked across the landscape and I was like, I think you had like a lot of like down, I always call it like down funnel, like betting content, right? You have like the Action Networks, the VSiN, the Roto Grinders. Like I've been like a Roto Grinders subscriber since they first started. I'm like a
Love
big
it.
DFS guy, for instance, right? Like I live that world and spend all the time to actually become a net positive player, and it's not easy.
Congrats.
Or sexy or anything like that. Yeah, it took a long time, a lot of effort, you know. But anyway, it's like I think I looked at it and it was like there's a lot of good content down there, right? And I'm like, we're not gonna try to pretend to be the experts, right? Like, even though I know what I'm doing, like I can't write about it. I'm not any smarter than the 20 guys I'm reading that are actually giving me that info. So we're like, okay, that world's great, right? And then you had like this mid funnel where, you know, it was like, you call it like Bill Simmons, call it like Pat McAfee, call it Scott Van Pelt, where it's like betting is built into that content really well, right? Mass audience, they know what they're getting. We're not going to go compete with them. Like we don't have that big of a personality yet. We have some that are growing that way. And then I looked at like the top of funnel, which was like for, the top of funnel, which was like new bettors, mass, you know, really like the younger stuff. And I didn't see, there were some people doing good jobs. You know, I think like Barstool, you know, again, like why Penn bought Barstool, right? It's like they were talking about betting in like a really smart way to their audience, right? Very authentic. And then you had like Bleacher Report, BR Betting was like doing some cool stuff early on, later, I don't know.
Yeah.
But early on, like they were doing good stuff, right? And then whatever. But they were like the one. And then I saw like a lot of other people out there that were like, it was clear that there was like a CEO that was like, do betting content, betting money is coming through. And a lot of it was just, and again, it's what I like about BR betting is like they didn't focus on this part I'm going to talk about now. Is a lot of it was just like, oh, like let's put a couple people on camera that look good on camera, and they're going to like talk about who to pick, right? And like why they should pick this, blah, 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 blah. And I always looked at that content and I was like, maybe I was a bit jaded or know how it works. I'm like, listen, you're from the casino, you really know how it works. And it's like, yeah, it's bullshit. Like nobody knows, right? And like, you know, even if you kind of did know, like let's say, and I'm going to toot my own horn on this. I didn't finish in the money in the Circa Millions, right? But like, let's say I was giving my picks out, which was like, yeah, tough. I'm exhausted from it. It was like, I was like, I gotta try to, you know, the amount of content I consumed. But like, I think I picked up what, like 63%, right? And I'm not going to last that long the rest of my NFL career. But like, even if I was like putting out that content, it only matters if you're like the person that's following you is using like bankroll management. they're following you all 18 weeks. Because like, even if you're doing a really good job on that, someone could like come upon you when you have a 1-4 week or like a 4-11 like stretch, which happens in betting. You're just going to like turn them off and like piss them off for life. So like, I was like, you're creating this content. It's bringing people in. They're either going to follow your falsehoods and they're going to lose money, or they're going to catch you at the wrong time. They're going to lose money and they're never going to come back. So we said, you know, Playmaker, we've done a really good job cultivating this audience. Let's do it a bit differently. We will never make a pick on Playmaker betting. We'll talk about picks, but we'll never make one. We'll never be like, this is who you should bet on. We never even like lean on anything like that either. Like let's focus on infotainment, right? Like talk about the stories, talk about like the fun moments around betting, like that sort of betting lifestyle culture, the idea that betting, don't get into betting to try to win money. Like you're probably not. And again, to get to that point where you are, it's like, there's 30 people that can help you, but like, it's going to take you a long time to get there. It's more, you know, view it as like, in it, you know, and a reason to watch a game you wanted to before, right? A reason to like argue with your friends and like pretend who knows the most, right? You know, a reason to, no different than, I don't view it as any different than going in I own a sports bar, so I like this analogy. Why do people go to a sports bar to watch a game? Well, it's fun, like the social aspect, it's fun, you get a root with your teams, blah 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 blah, meet friends, because you could always like go spend $80 drinking $12 beers and wings all day, and you could always say, well, like, hey, you could have sat at home and spent $5 on a six pack of beer and made your own food and saved $80. It's like you go there because of the value of it. And I think kind of similar to like if you place $5, $50, $100, whatever that number is for people, it adds like that value component to the game. Like it does get interesting at the end, especially if you're betting like spreads and totals and stuff. Like the game could be a total waste of time if you don't care about that. But then all of a sudden, like you want free throws at the end to go in, or you don't want fouls at the end to go in. And it creates this like excitement and this sort of atmosphere. And I think that's like the sort of, you know, the community that we're trying to hit, right? And it's like so infotainment number one, like we want to make fun, entertaining content. We want to like create series. We want it to be like relatable. We have the education component as well. So education, we never give people bad advice. And we do tell them like bankroll management, things like that. We're actually working with the AGA coming up here on their campaign. Wow. Like they like the content we do. And they say, you know, you guys, like you're doing it for a younger audience. And it's very easy to go in like the other way. It'd be like, hey, here's a 20 team parlay to do, or like do this, do that, do that. So we do the educational component, and we do it in a way that's like people want to watch it. It's not just, they want to be me coming on being like, well, here's the thing about like steam chasing and bankroll management. And we also take the approach too to be like, hey, like, yeah, like betting on parlays and single gun parlays, like it's a negative EV, but like it's fine if you do it because it's still fun. Like there is that fun component of like throwing a lottery ticket out there, right? And if you hit it, you're like the toast of the freaking community in the town. And if you miss it, whatever. So we don't like discourage people from doing it. It's more along the lines of being like, hey, like it's cool to do that, but like, isn't it better to make your $1,000, $100, whatever, like last longer and to maybe to do that, maybe just like bet point spreads or overs or unders or like money lines, right? Where like the odds aren't as bad. And like a lot of people don't realize when you stack a parlay, like the odds get worse. And like single game parlay, it's like all correlated and they get a lot worse, even though you think you're a genius to be like, oh, like, yeah, you know, the Chiefs are going to win. If the Chiefs are going to win this weekend, then Pat Mahomes, oh, yeah, he's going to throw for over 300 yards. And you're like, I'm getting one over on the books, but it's all built into that, right? And it's not, and it's not like, oh, how dumb can you be to not know that? It's like, it takes a while to sort of learn that. And then the last part is like storytelling. And then we do a lot of stuff like on the street. We go to events, like we're doing like film. We have our creators who are great, and they're asking people like betting questions or just questions about what they would do if like the Dolphins win the Super Bowl. And it, again, it's all fun. It all goes back to like sports betting can be fun. Do it within means. Like don't try to just throw the idea of like you're gonna make a living out of it, just throw it out the window, right? And if you want to do that, like go check out the Unabated guys, go check out this guy, right? It's gonna be a lot drier, but you know, go there. But for us, it's like if you want to be like the 95% that are just doing it to have fun, that's where we come in. And the brands, you know, the betting brands like us too, because they're like, hey, you're not, we don't really jam bonuses down people's throats, like but they're like, hey, you guys are bringing people in, and they're like, they're sticking around. And like, yeah, they're maybe not whales right away because they're 21, 25, 29 instead of like 45, 50, like CEO of a company, but they're like, they're sticking around, they're growing, and like they are showing like retention there and all that as well. And like, that's our thing. We're just like, hey, like go enjoy it, like grow, like learn a new sport, bet a new game, but like, you don't have to do it every day. You don't have to do it for every game. Like you're better off not doing it for every game on a football because you can't research all those. Maybe like pick three or four or five. And, you know, do it that way. And we have some free to play games. We're getting into the affiliate space a little bit, but a lot of it's been sponsorship thus far. And again, I think it's just finding, I don't know, I talk a lot on that. It's just, and I'm pretty passionate about it. It's like just finding that sort of empty space that wasn't being covered before. And I think we've built a really good community there.
Yeah, I think it makes sense. That I really appreciate the way that you looked at it, right? Like, we're not going to be, you know, I listen to VSiN pretty much every day. Like, there's a couple shows on there. I try never to miss.
I love it, but it's so dry for,
Yes, exactly. But I appreciate, you know, a numbers game with Gil Alexander. Like, he's my favorite. And, like, what he says and the way he says it, I listen to it because it makes me think about betting in a different way, right? And, like, it's kind of, what are you paying attention to and why are you paying attention to it? Not just, I think Patrick Mahomes is going to play, so that means the Chiefs are going to, it's not that boring, right? Like, so there's more nuance to it, which I appreciate, right? And because I've been in New Jersey for, you know, the whole time that PASP has been revealed, I've been betting since 2019 at this point, right? I'm not the furthest thing from a whale ever, but I like to bet on games. I like to do that research, right? And it's kind of, I appreciate how you looked at it from, again, we're not going to be the bottom of the funnel. We're not the Pat McAfee's of the world, but we can just educate people on what's going on. And the thing that scares me the most, I was with Caesars with Profit Exchange, moving on to a new opportunity here in the next couple of weeks. And the amount of people that actually don't know what a point spread is, that are betting on it, is like alarmingly high. I was in Arizona for the launch of the Caesars Sportsbook, the state of Arizona. I was there for the night it launched. It was Tampa Bay, Dallas, but it was the good version of those teams a couple years ago, and it was an absolute crazy game. And I remember being there, talking to the people, boots on the ground, being like, yeah, I'm going to take Dallas. I think 9 points is just way too many. Like, that just makes no sense. And they're like, no, Tampa Bay is going to win by 50. I was like, I don't know. Have you watched the NFL? Like, that's not usually how it works. Like, that's a huge point spread in the NFL. They're like, no, it's cool. It's whatever. Do you? Like, we're all just here to have a good time, right? So at the end of the night, I run into one of those people again, and they're like, yeah, I lost my bet. I was like, oh, damn, I thought you took Dallas. He's like, yeah, I took Dallas +8.5. I was like, that means you won. Dallas, that means you won. And I had to explain to him what a point spread was, and like, he bet $150 on this game. And it's just like, dude, like, hey, you spend your money how you want. Like, it is what it is. I'm not here to tell you, you know, I'm not putting my hand in your pocket, but at least know what you're betting, right? And I think, like, every new state that comes up, it's just the excitement. It's the energy that's around it. It's everyone on the internet is talking about it. And it's been talking about it. It's like, I want to do it. I can't wait. This is going to be great. And yeah, it's the same game parlays. Like, it's total bullshit. I put them in every once in a while, but we know it's, like, a bad bet to place. But I appreciate that you guys are looking at it from a content, from an overview, like, here's just some research. Here's some information. Pay attention to some of these things. I think that's like a really great way of going about it, because not too many people are doing that really across the entire industry.
Yeah, and we're able to like play nice. And like, when I said it was boring, I didn't mean it. Like, it's interesting.
No. I know what you mean.
I think if you put Visa in front of someone that had never bet before, like, they'd be like,
that's boring. So, yeah, like, exactly.
But I love Baseball Reference, but if I tried to like get someone into baseball and my first thing was like, hey, go check out like the advanced stats on this, they'd be like, this, you know, whatever.
You would be surprised what his WOBA was that year, man. His WOBA was off the charts, right?
Yeah. You know, and it's like, I like sports too that I don't want to like get analytically super into either. Like, I'm like, I don't care, man. I watch hoops. Like, I don't need to like know all this stuff. And it's like, we're able to like play really nice then with like the unabateds, right? And the beasts. And we haven't really pushed people there yet because we're figuring out how to get them from like here to like here. And like, we have like this Discord community that kind of like is there, and like how we filter it all down, like, I don't know, but we've worked with a few of them in the past. We worked with like Fade to Noise, right? And we've worked with, a few others that were kind of like developing those tools and all that. And like, yeah, for us, it's about kind of being straight with people. And it's also like not being, like you said, like there's people that don't know what a point spread is, but like betting on sports, especially in the casino, can be very intimidating. Like the first time you do it, it's like this big board, there's people waiting, like the counter people aren't always like the greatest, and you kind of just like get one in there. You don't actually know what you bet on. Same thing with the app. I mean, the apps, it's like, you know, there's a lot there and it's a little bit easier, but nobody's really created like a great betting 101 video. We're still working on that. Like, with the first time you place a sports bet, like, how do you, we've done a few, but it's like, what is the holy grail of that you like show to someone that's never done it? But like, we don't want to talk down to people either. And I think, you know, I think in the betting community, you know, Twitter and stuff, you can get people that are like, oh, you put a parlay, you freaking idiot. Like, blah, blah, blah. Like, everyone likes to pretend they're sharp or a pro. So they're all like, talking down to everyone, and we're like, nah, like, whatever, like, people can like bet what they want, like, I don't care, like, you don't know, like, nobody knows, right? I mean, you like, you talk about like professional bettors, like, they don't know who's gonna win, like, they're doing things like steam chasing, arbing, and all finding soft lines, like, that doesn't mean they like know who's going to win the game this weekend, right? They know how to attack the lines, they know how to like get ahead of it early, and like, yeah, there are guys there that have like good understandings of it, but like, you know, if you're picking 60%, you're living on like a private island somewhere. So like, we don't want to talk down to people either. And we don't want to be like, oh, you're an idiot for placing a 17 leg parlay. We're like, hey, if that hits, like, great. If not, like, just don't chase it. We're like, if you hit 17 is ridiculous, but like, you know, if you do an 8 leg parlay and you miss it by one, like, that doesn't mean like you're going to hit it the next time.
Yeah.
And, like, that, I think that's always an important lesson. It's like, don't chase your losses. Don't be like, oh, I had a bad beat, I was totally right, like, I'm gonna win the next one. It's all like, again, I'm saying this more to the audience, you know it. Yeah. Like,
no,
like,
I appreciate it. You're good
on this. Yeah, Caesars was built on this, you know, people chasing and all that.
The funny thing about a bad beat, it's like a really good beat for everybody else, right? Like, I always find that very hilarious. Like, a bad beat, like, I've had the opposite of bad beats where there was zero reason I should have won and all of a sudden I won. Right. And like, it's great. It's a great beat. But no one ever talks about those. We always like to be so negative, and it's very frustrating, I think, specifically in this community, just because it's all based about money. And it's funny when people lose money, right? I don't know why, but it's just, and my friend lost that 8 leg parlay, right? What a drag. Like, that sucks. I'm gonna get a giggle a little bit at you, man. Like, I told you it wasn't gonna hit. It's never gonna hit. Oh, but it was the last one I put in. It's always the last one that kills you, man. It's always the last one that kills you. And I just appreciate it.
It is, but when you lose the first one, you don't even think about it. I bet if you went back and looked at, like, parlay bet slips you had before, you probably hit, like, the middle five.
Yeah.
But you missed, like, the first two and all that. And it's, like, and I was going to say, like, poker's like that, too. Like, I've been lucky enough to win a couple of World Series poker tournaments. And, like, I know a lot of poker players, and I hate listening about hands. But the only time people talk about hands, like, the bad beats, right? Like, oh, you know, like, I can't believe this donk, you know, 3-bet on this, and you hit the jack. But it's, like, to win a poker, especially a poker tournament, like, you have to, like, suck out of people, like, left and right. But you never actually think, you're like, oh, that was skill. Like, I knew it. Like, oh, I knew that, yeah, like, I...
Exactly.
I only had a 30% chance to hit the flush, and I bet two times more than what was optimal. But I knew that was coming. But, like, on the other end, you're like, if you're playing yourself, you're like, that guy's an idiot. Like, I priced him out of the pot. Like, what is he doing? And sports, it's funny, like, betting in general is like that. And that has to be, like, a human psychological thing that's just never going to ever escape people.
No, and I agree, man. And we're pretty much coming up here on time. So my last question to you is, if you're hitting 60%, where's your private island? Was your question, if I'm not mistaken, you hit 60% in Circa Millions this year. So David, I'm like, do I get an invite to the island? Like, is the island under construction? What are we doing there?
Yeah, I mean, the thing there is, like, I'm almost too, I like know too much about how it all works. So it was like, I would never, you know, if you were placing bets, like, it's easy to just do those five games, but maybe you're doing a few more, or just like, you're not like increasing your unit size out of nowhere either. Listen, if I figure out a system to hit 60% NFL for the next 10 years, like, sure. But I know what's going to happen. And then you get in the playoffs, all of a sudden you're like, not 60%. You're like, oh, betting's very humbling. Right. And I understand that, like, Even on, like, the circuit thing, like, as much as I'd love to be like, I knew everything, like, there was plenty of games there that was, like, lucky, you know. And, like, you have to get lucky at the end of the day. You can do all the research you want. There's still that, and it, that's the beauty about sports, the beauty about gambling. Like, there is always going to be inherently luck involved on that anyways. And I think it's also, like, not getting too big of a head. It's kind of like celebrate, and we always say this, like, celebrate the wins and, like, commiserate the losses. And I think that that's kind of part of it. And if you can, like, manage your bankroll, if you can manage your expectations, and enjoy it, like, sports betting is, like, a phenomenal addition, right? I don't care, like, what various politicians say and stuff like that. And again, it takes discipline. It's not easy. And there's certainly people that are going to have gambling problems. You need to, like, get them help too. But I think, like, the people that don't have addiction or addictive tendencies that high, like, if you get them doing it the right way and looking at it the right way and, like, realizing they're not going to win money at it, but, like, enjoy it when you do, I think then sports betting has a huge bright future in America, even though it's not always going to, there's going to be bad things that happen with it. But I mean, again, I own a bar, like, you know, I mean, I'm fine serving alcohol.
Beer?
We don't overserve people, but I understand that, like, you know, like, alcohol can lead to really awful things in some people, but, it's all about, like, approaching things, like, responsibly. And I think, yeah, that's the last thing I'll mention on, like, betting is, I think it's, I'm very positive on the future of it. There will be hiccups. There will be overregulation. There'll be underregulation. But I think if you can, like, kind of keep the long view, I think it's exciting for everyone, the players, the companies that, you know, you've worked with or are going to be working with in the future, and then the states that you know think that that's going to solve all their financial problems.
Yeah, well, we'll see about that one. Yeah, it's really easy to misplace $100 million. I'll be honest. If I've ever looked at a government contract, which I haven't, pretty confident it's very easy to misplace that money. But no, man, this was awesome. I sincerely appreciate it. I appreciate your passion. I wish I knew you were so incredible at gambling. I would have brought that part of the conversation up a little earlier so we could have dove a little deeper into that. But I think we did a great job and really just appreciate it. You know, you talking about the sales, the aspects, all these different shades of revenue, how you're looking at it, how you're kind of viewing it from not afar, but from a different lens, right, than the actual content creators themselves. I think that's a really important piece of all this. And then again, the sports betting piece that just came up recently over here the last couple of years. I mean, it's only opportunity to grow and grow and grow. And I don't think it's going anywhere anytime soon, especially with more and more states legalizing. We have Massachusetts coming up here in the next couple of months, which don't know if you heard, it's kind of an important state. So, you know, we'll see what happens with that. But David, this has been absolutely fantastic. David Woodley, President, CRO of Playmaker. Appreciate your time today. Appreciate the audience. This time's the only thing we don't get more of. So thank you very much for all yours. But other than that, man, hope you have a great rest of your night. Appreciate it.
Thanks, man. Yeah, it was great. I really appreciate you having me on. Let me ramble on for an hour.
Dude,
hour
let's do it minutes. Again.
So I'll let you back your life too. Yeah.
Oh, please. This is my favorite thing I get to do, man. So you gave me this hour and change, and I appreciate it. We'll get you back on again. Maybe if there's something in our future together, but you never know. Crazier things have happened, but awesome. Appreciate it, man. Thank you so much. Have a great night.
Yeah, thanks, man.
Bye, everybody. Yep.